you by Something Digital, a Magento Enterprise and Shopify Plus partner. Something Digital is an award-winning digital agency that will put your e-commerce site to work. Visit them online today at somethingdigital.com/podcast.
Hello and welcome to Merchant to Merchant, a podcast for merchants and by merchants brought to you by Something Digital. I'm your host, Philip Jackson, and today I'm here with two people who I've been speaking to for months, it feels like, and I'm super excited to share their story with you here today. Today we have Sean Fowler from Pentair, and we have Paul Briscoe from The Human Element. Welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you. Are we able to edit this podcast?
Yeah, we are. But we're not going to edit that part out because that's really fun when people ask that.
Yeah. It's Sean Fowler, not Fowler.
Fowler. Oh, Sean Fowler. Yeah. Well, that's interesting because I sure failed at saying your name correctly.
Yeah.
Sean Fowler from Pentair. Well, welcome. And I'm really glad to have you two join us. You know, I know that there's an interesting story here. I sort of virtually met you guys through Dree from The Human Element, who reached out to us last year in 2016 when we were at Magento Imagine, because I believe this particular Pentair was up for a Magento Excellence Award for the build that they did for a site. I think it was around water filtration, sort of caught my eye, and I've been sort of watching you guys for some time, and I've just thought it was such a lovely and sort of a powerful story that you had to share, and so I'm really glad to have you today. Sean, could you kind of set it up for us a little bit and introduce yourself, and then we'll move over to Paul.
Yeah, my name is Sean Fowler. I'm the manager of digital innovation at Pentair. Pentair is a global Fortune 500 company, and it's broken out to a lot of different platforms and companies based under that. And today we're talking about the Pentair Aquatic Ecosystems website that Human Element built. We have an e-commerce website that we sell direct to consumers, but it's more, we're a B2B company that sells to businesses, but we treat them like B2C customers. And we had built a demonstration facility called, and we call it PACE Water. And water stands for World Aquaculture Technology Engineering and Research Center. And we partner with Human Element to create an innovative kind of style to showcase customers around the world, give them an inside look onto the building. And through the partnership with Human Element, we came up with a way to design a website that give customers firsthand experiences as if they were there in person in the building.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us. And Paul, if you could go ahead.
Yeah. My name is Paul Briscoe. I'm the technical lead here at Human Element. I'm happy to work here at Human Element. We are a US-based digital agency focused on e-commerce development with Magento. I think one of the things that, you know, our clients like about us, including Sean and Pentair, is that we like to keep them around for the long haul. We like to kind of consider ourselves part of their team and just help them connect their businesses with technology in ways that are useful to them and meaningful. So we do, you know, a lot of Magento development. We're Magento 2 ready, and we have certified Magento 1 developers. So, you know, I think it's a natural partnership working with Pentair to kind of develop the PACE Water website. And it was a really interesting concept, I think, when Sean brought it to us. And we were kind of really excited to help him kind of realize that vision, and even more excited when we were nominated for the Magento Excellence Award.
Hmm. So tell me a little bit about that and sort of the journey to get there.
I'll start with the overall Pentair story. Pentair Aquatic Ecosystems is involved in the aquaculture market, which is commercial fish farming. And essentially, within the next 20 or 30 years, we are going to overfish our oceans, and aquaculture is a way to ensure that we can eat clean fish, track where they came from, and still feed the demanding growth of the world. And through fish farming and aquaculture, we'll be able to, you know, come up with ways in order to feed people correctly. And a lot of times fish farming gets a bad rap because, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, there was horrible ways of doing it. And with today's technology and being able to track where your fish comes from, it's the future in order to feed our, you know, our growing country. And so that is one thing that we kind of strive strongly on, is to help push the world for, you know, in the forefront of the world in innovative ways in order to grow fish farming in order to feed the world, because it's only growing more. You know, there are stats that say our population is going to grow an extra 2.7 billion people in the next 50 years. And if we're already overfishing our oceans, where's that protein going to come from? You can only add so many cows. And what other ways,
right?
What other ways can you feed the world? We believe aquaculture is that way. So we're doing all we can to aggressively grow the aquaculture market.
It's interesting because you sort of hear a lot today around companies with there's a term for it, which escapes me, but it's sort of like a humanitarian or a cause or a good deed that they're doing through their business. But, you know, the thing that sort of struck me about the Pace Water initiative in particular was that it seemed like at its core, it wasn't like the social good was coming along for the ride. The whole mission seems to be really facing down a social and really a global issue.
Yeah, we built the facility to basically showcase, to tell potential fish farmers. And it's a little different. The industry we're in was, if someone right next door to us wants to build an aquaculture facility, we encourage it. The more people we can encourage to build these facilities and grow fish the right way, it's just going to help the industry grow. So you really don't have competition as far as farmers in the industry. And we built this facility not to grow fish, but to use it as an example research facility. So if you're an investment firm or someone trying to do better in the world, we're going to bring you down the facility and say, listen, we built this as an example to showcase our technology, to show you, the customer, on how you can do it on your own. And here's an example facility. So we made the, you know, $3 or $4 million investment on this building with all of our technology loaded into this building in order to showcase to the potential customer trying to grow and enter the market.
Wow. You're a large company with a lot of resources, but I can't think of a lot of other businesses that have a sort of business to business aspect where their or part of their supply chain involves a large manufacturer supplier of parts, where to understand or to represent the needs of their customer better, they built a facility that mimics and basically behaves in the same way that their customers' facilities were, right? That's it's like pedigree dog food building a grocery store.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And that's why, you know, we see the opportunity and the growth of the world, and we want to make sure we're on the forefront there, because at some point we're going to overfish our oceans. And at some point fish is the protein of the future. Mm. It takes 8 pounds of feed and 8,000 liters of water just to produce 1 pound of meat. It takes 1 pound of feed to produce 1 pound of fish, and you're using 98% reuse of the water. So there's a lot more opportunities and advantages. And we can also start talking about how, you know, the protein in fish is better than the protein in meat, and the sustainability factor of it and the traceability factor of it as well. All these reasons are why fish is part of the future. And we built this facility and are creating products every day to help innovate and grow the industry with that.
What's the sort of, like, who's your customer? When I think about, you know, fisheries or I don't think of large, you know, international conglomerates. I think of local or regional suppliers that, supply, you know, the food that comes to our table or is in the grocery store every day.
Honestly, it's both. There are, you know, there's a top 20 aquaculture fish farming companies that are, you know, big global conglomerate companies that, you know, are $1 billion in sales every year. But you're right. We also deal with the smaller, I wouldn't call them mom and pop shops, but, you know, the businesses that are locally in the region that, you know, they're not trying to build giant sea cages out, you know, in the ocean, but still need the technology, whether it be certain pumps or certain filters or some aeration for their kind of operation locally. And you'll start to see a lot more of that, those pop up, whether it be through aquaponics or hydroponics, as well as, you know, this RAS farming that we're doing as well. And RAS is recirculated aquaculture systems, which is basically another way to raise fish indoors. And you'll see, you know, through the next 10, 15 years, you'll see these start popping up more and more, because you can build, you know, these aquaponics facilities, these RAS facilities anywhere where there's buildings. So a lot of times you see a lot more of aquaponics companies sprouting up in the middle of urban environments. And that's the way you can get locally sourced seafood, vegetables, right in your backyard, anywhere in the world.
It's interesting. So you just kind of following up on the concept of overfishing, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about that, because I think that certainly is one thing that sounds very scary, but there's probably other impacts. There's probably environmental impacts to, you know, pushing large boats all over the oceans and probably some pretty inhumane ways that we catch fish too.
Yeah. With wild caught fish, you don't know where they came from. You don't know what they're eating. You don't know what's being dumped in the ocean every day. With farm fish that are raised on land, you're able to track the exact amount of water they're doing. And, you know, you get people that argue, oh, the feed's not good, or they're, you know, they're swimming around in their own poop all the time. But there's technology out there nowadays where that's recirculated out of there. So the fish that are being raised and farmed are higher in protein, less diseased, and overall better for you as a person, because we're able to track and treat these fish just like you would a cow on the farm, right? We're able to treat them as a product that we can stand behind, that's sustainable, and we know the traceability of where that fish came from.
And that sounds like it's a no small feat, right? So it's more important, I think, to consumers now than ever to know where their food is coming from. I think of some of the labeling laws that are being passed on a state-by-state basis, and even some at the federal level that are being looked at. How does that sort of legislation or regulation begin to impact the actual fisheries, and how does that have an impact on your business?
You know, there's certain standards as far as, MSC certified, or, you know, ASC certified, or BAP certified, or whatever type of aquaculture governance there are out there. We just work closely with them to make sure that our products are, you know, Energy Star certified, or are doing the right things to help these farmers improve their yields. You know, we're not in the actual growing of fish. We're supplying the products to those people. So we're trying to help forge the curve by saying, here, let us supply you with the products and possibly the design of your farm. You go out there and make the investment to grow the fish. We'll teach you everything you need to know, how to do it, what to use to do it. But we're there to help forward the industry ahead on the product side.
Yeah, it's interesting. So you talked a lot about selling to farmers direct. When you say direct to consumer, when you're selling direct to consumer, your end user, the person who buys the products from you, your customer is a farmer or somebody that's, you know, looking to buy filtration systems at large scale.
Correct. Yeah.
It's interesting because I think about how many applications that could extend out to that's beyond just fisheries or farming or aquaponics, potentially government or, you know, large scale systems like that, or maybe even consumers, people who are looking for, you know, last mile neighborhood filtration, or even right in their own homes. Is there any product offering that you guys have, or a line of products that allow you to sort of sell out to a broader mass audience?
You know, like I said, Pentair Aquatic Ecosystems is just one small platform in the entire umbrella of Pentair, right? So Pentair is heavily invested in water and the filtration of water and keeping the sustainable impact on overall water. Pentair sells pool pumps, in-home water filtration, and residential commercial filtration of water. So we're using all the same technology to go into different markets, but it's still through water filtration, aeration of water, filters, and whatnot. So, you know, Pentair Pool is a very large company. And the Pentair Aquatic Ecosystems is a spinoff of Pool, because if you think about it, in Pool, when you need a pool pump to pump water, you know, to pump water throughout your pool. Well, in the fish farming industry, you still need to move water. So we use a lot of the same technology, yet they're rated differently. And you cannot use a Pentair pool pump for an aquaculture thing, and you can't use an aquaculture pump for a Pentair for a pool. But it's the same technology. It's the same pump, and it's rated differently, and it's got different brains. But essentially, a pump is supposed to move water. And so we're able to share technology throughout Pentair platforms, all based around water, the movement of water, and the filtration of water.
That's interesting. So Sean, you came to Paul and you said, build us a site, and make it look good. But what were some of the desires that you had to represent the brand, and what was your main goal in building the Pace site?
So we, for the Pace Water website, we of course loved what Human Element did with us for our normal site, PentairAS.com. And we really wanted to challenge Human Element here to say, okay, let's do something different. Let's take the aquaculture industry by storm. It's not really known as a innovative technology industry. You know, a lot of our customers are old farmers that aren't on computers much. They're out on the farm working. So we wanted to be able to do something technical and innovative in order to kind of shock the industry and say, all right, Pentair is a big player in this industry. You know, between myself and Paul, what can we do that none of our competitors are doing? What can we do to kind of make sure our customers know that we're ready to play in this field and come look at what we've built? And, you know, we invested millions of dollars building this facility. We had to make sure our website matched that same level of depth and breadth. Both sides came up with.
Like, kind of like Sean said, you know, they wanted to kind of challenge us. And I think like one of the things that I actually enjoyed about Pace Water was the challenge. When we were kind of talking it through in the beginning, we were thinking like, man, there's a lot of different ways that we can approach this, because we knew that we wanted some kind of a custom walkthrough or like an immersive experience, where the idea that this is going to be a research and education facility, we wanted people to be inside of the building. And it seemed more than a website. And, you know, when we started looking around, obviously like the Google Street View, you know, kind of gives you that immersive experience where you can kind of walk through spaces virtually. Not quite virtual reality, but close enough where it could allow us to kind of put the user into the facility and interact with some of the systems and look at a bunch of media that was relevant to each of the touch points inside of the facility. So where we kind of landed on that was trying to find a way to integrate the Google Maps Street View with Magento, and then making as nice of an experience on the front end as we could. I think one of the cool things about it was being able to work with some of the Pentair engineers to actually use some of the systems equipment API to integrate real-time statistics onto the front end of that website. So If I am like a researcher, I can kind of go in and I can look and see like the current temperature of the water in system D, or I can check what's the pH balance, and you know, all these different types of things that kind of showcase the abilities of that equipment itself.
Interesting.
Because let's say if I'm interested in like one of those meters, like I can see that, oh, this has a real-time API that I can connect to, so that if I'm at home and I need to know that my fish are okay or the water's not too hot or too cold, I can kind of check it without having to go physically to and read a thermometer, you know. So
right,
it's kind of that sort of stuff was cool. And then
Alexa, what's the temperature of my fish tank?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
A lot of
right. Oh, I went and triggered my Alexa. Sorry, one second.
right. So Pentair has something called Eagle.io. And it is a real-time tracking for, there's a lot of kind of statistics and things you want to analyze in your water. You want to check the DO, you want to check the oxygen levels, you want to check the aeration levels. And we have that ability to say, okay, what can we read from this water? And a lot of times the old school way was a farmer would go in and check the stats for the water in each tank. He'd have to go every 2 hours to check it to make sure His money is in those tanks. So those fish have to make sure that water has got to be impeccable for those fish in order to live.
Yeah, sure.
So this way we showcase the ability to say, listen, we're putting our stats up here on the website. You're seeing what our stats are on our website. You're seeing exactly what's going on right now. And we give an inside look to customers trying to view the website and say, this is how we're running our system. Yes, the numbers may be different a little bit because we're more of a smaller system. It's more of an example. But here are the parameters that we're searching for. And this is what we're able to offer you. That's the good thing about the API call between Eagle.io and the website is customers are allowed to go on our website and see the exact DO of that tank right now. That was huge for a lot of our customers to be able to go in there, see the stats on it, see the actual tank, and then see the products that are attached that run the tank. And the cool thing about that as well is Human Element did a really good job of linking the two as well. So if you go on a product hotspot on Pace Water, it gives you, you know, the product description. We have videos and pictures about it, but it also gives you a direct link back to PentairAS.com if someone would want to purchase it. You know, there is a correlation between purchases from PaceWater.com to PentairAS.com. It helps kind of complete the whole cycle, why this website was built. And it's not only just a showcase site, but it still has a small e-commerce piece to it, being able to connect the products back to go be able to purchase on PentairAS.com.
Yeah. Just one of the other things I thought was really cool about that was the real-time feed. It's kind of cool that like the robotic feeder, there's inside of the facility, there's a robotic feeder that is like kind of on a timer. And so you can program it and set it, you know, at different locations around, and it literally just kind of just drives around the whole building on a track and then stops over each one of the fish tanks and then will deposit a bunch of feed into the tank so that the fish can eat. It's kind of cool that there's a real-time feed in there that you can kind of watch that happen. When around feeding time, you see this robotic feeder start to kind of come over and then just kind of stop. And before the food even drops into the water, all the fish are going crazy because they know that's dinner time. So as soon as it drops in there, the fish is flopping everywhere. And that was actually pretty cool as well to kind of like be able to stream that so people could kind of watch and see what that looks like.
It's interesting how it used to be if you created a site to show off, you know, your product selection 10 years ago or 15 years ago, these would be like three items in a bulleted list on a product, you know, spec or data sheet. And today we have the ability to, you know, show, don't tell, which is sort of that old adage in creative writing. It's we want to show people. And I think giving people the ability to see data insights, to be able to watch a real sort of facility and process as it, you know, as it exists in the real world day to day, which may mimic their real world solution or the real world environment, that speaks so powerfully to someone who is looking to make an investment and a purchase, because it shows that you understand what they need. And you understand, or maybe it even allows them to daydream a little bit. We always talk about sort of that aspirational aspect of products and brands and giving people something to sort of aspire to own or to have. And this really sounds like it fits very closely in that model of providing sort of a level of attainability, but some aspiration there too for your prospective customers.
This podcast is brought to you by Something Digital. Something Digital is a full-service e-commerce agency specializing in strategy, design, digital marketing, and more. Something Digital has award-winning creative design and world-class engineers that can deliver any size project, from concept to launch. Something Digital is a Magento Enterprise and Shopify Plus partner. Put your e-commerce site to work with Something Digital. Check them out today at somethingdigital.com/podcast.
Yeah, Phil. And then also what we started doing as well is we're kind of turning the website into an educational resource, working with our kind of the everyday workers there and some of our technical experts. We've started bi-weekly, I wouldn't call it blogging, but giving bi-weekly updates on little tidbits of information. So we just got done, let's just say, purging one of the tanks. There was at one point the fish were swimming in two different directions in the tank. Normally fish usually go in one direction and they just kind of go with it. But we were able to kind of take a small video sample and say, why are these fish swimming in two directions? Did you know that they do this? And this is why and this is how they do this, because of this, this, and this. And that really sparks the attention of a lot of educators and also people in the industry that are trying to learn more, because there's not a lot of aquaculture experts out there. So the more we can kind of showcase our thought leadership and our expertise in the industry has been really beneficial for us, and especially the website, knowing that people and educators are logging onto the site to see what we're saying on a bi-weekly basis to learn and educate themselves on the aquaculture industry as well. It's been a huge success for us so far.
There must have been challenges with sort of trying to create this, what seems like a very large scale vision, into a site that's, you know, shoppable and as an information resource, and one that can sort of live and stand through changes in industry and changes in consumer demand and, you know, changes even in technology. What were some of the challenges that you faced when trying to build the site?
Well, I'll start first, Paul. I think some of our initial challenges is I really wanted to be progressive and innovative with this site, but we had to understand that a lot of our customers aren't there yet, right? We have 92% of our conversions happen on a desktop. So I know we see all those stats, how mobile's thriving in industry and mobile's taking over. Our industry is not there yet. A lot of our customers are desktop-based people and not really the familiar with how the web, you know, of course they know how to shop online, but they're not your typical, we're not your typical B2C company. So we really push the edge of the envelope here for the design and layout of the site, coming up with that to make sure that we weren't upsetting our customers, confusing our customers, was kind of the initial challenge we had, I would say, for that one.
I think from my perspective, one of the challenging things was kind of pushing a little bit for what you could actually do with the Google Maps API. It's super powerful, obviously, and you can do a lot with it. But at the time, it didn't allow you to do certain pieces of it. Without getting too much into detail, there's each Street View panorama, you know, has its own like an API that you can kind of interact with that piece individually. And I think that when you actually started to think about each individual step in that tour being like kind of its own worldview, and then in every one of those sections, being able to plot different latitude and longitude coordinates of that specific location, and then trying to apply it to a 360 degree sort of field of view, and then making sure that everything would stick where it was. That was kind of the challenge from my perspective. That was the hardest part.
So the technology implementation, or like trying to fulfill the vision of putting you right there in the room, that sounds like a challenge that a lot of brick and mortar retailers may want to try to overcome. How do you see this being applied globally to other businesses and other types of retail verticals?
So I had submitted a talk to Imagine, which didn't get accepted this year, but hoping maybe next year, kind of about the landscape of online shopping. And I think that what we're going to see is that, I mean, and it's already happening, virtual reality technology everywhere, and it's becoming more integrated with every device that we have that we can, you know, potentially get to the internet on. Like, it just makes so much sense for Google Business View, you can already kind of have someone come and give you that walkthrough of your store, but there isn't really a way to interact with it. And I think that, you know, there are a couple, you know, open source plugins out on GitHub that you can kind of get. And one of those is actually integrated into this tour that will allow you to kind of, you know, give it that look and or the touch points. But, you know, I think that's what we're going to see coming up, is that you're going to be able to walk through any store that you want and just kind of click on the things that you need. And it's going to probably start to become more commonplace.
Right. It's an interesting proof of concept that, and I think we see this a lot, is that you have brands that are sort of willing to take a risk, but they're not always the ones that probably need the innovation the most. Andrea Ward, who's the chief marketing officer of Magento, she said this really well. She said, there's a difference between innovation and ingenuity. Right. Innovation is the guy who invents the wheel. Ingenuity is the guy who put four of them on a box and pushed it around.
Sure.
Right. And I think it's interesting when you have, you know, it's an interesting application of technology that already exists, that, you know, has been used, you know, in other applications. But to use it for commerce, I think is really engaging. And it sometimes takes a proof of concept, or someone who's willing to be a little bit creative and a little daring, in this case, Pentair, you know, to be a little daring to push the envelope and have something demonstrable for others to take a look at. I'm also reminded of the Yuri Minkoff is speaking at Bronto Summit, where I'll actually be speaking. I don't know if this podcast will land before that, but I'll be speaking at Bronto Summit. Mm-hmm. Fortunately and unfortunately for me, they picked up two of my talks, so I have to speak twice. He's keynoting, and he's Rebecca Minkoff is a, you know, global brand, fashion brand.
Yep.
And they sort of, you know, introduced this magic mirror technology, which was not a brand new concept, but they'd done it in such a way that it brought that brand expectation of that high-end experience and bringing digital into the store. It created a demonstrable element for other brands to realize the potential. And now you see that everywhere. You know, I have another podcast called Future Commerce, where we had Scott Emmons of the Neiman Marcus Innovation Lab, and they've done something very, very similar. So it's an interesting application of the technology. That's just one part of it, though. There's a lot that goes into the journey of creating a site. If you had to sum it up to one or maybe two things, what did you think was going to be one of the hardest challenges to overcome bringing this site online? Maybe what was the hardest? Maybe you had a misconception there. What was the hardest challenge that you had?
From like a business perspective or from like a technology perspective?
Yeah, I'd like to hear both parts. Let's start with business and we'll wrap up with technology.
Okay.
I think for business, it was kind of the same thing where we're taking a huge risk. You know, I had to trust that Paul and Human Element could figure this whole Google Maps API thing out. It was kind of an off-the-wall idea that I had, you know, very, very beginning. And Paul and his team kind of really took it together and really brought it to life. I had no way of thinking, when we first started thinking, okay, we need a website for the Pace Water Building. What's it going to look like? I knew it wanted to be innovative, but what they did with the Google Maps API and how they took the Google Street View was something I'd never even thought of. So it was kind of nerve-wracking explaining, you know, trying to get the money to leadership. Like, hey, by the way, I'm going to build the site. It's going to do something like this, but I don't know how it's going to be done yet. Can I have some money for that? Like, that doesn't really happen too often in a big company. So I had to really sell it to make sure that they understood what was happening. You know, it was a risk in order to, you know, get the money for it and produce what they did. And obviously you can tell at the end, they knocked it out of the park. Everyone who's seen it couldn't be happy with it. But just that initial, hey, there's this random thing out there and I'm going to try to create a site out of it. Are you guys cool with that? There's a lot of head scratching at the very beginning, especially, you know, with a lot of high up people in leadership that don't understand the full technology that we're trying to do here. I had to build the site and show it to them in order to them to fully understand it.
That takes a lot of trust that you've obviously won internally too, to take an idea. I think that's one of the things that we struggle with is retail brands or you know, even startups, but a brand that sort of has this really large vision, but doesn't necessarily have the buy-in of everybody, you know, in the company. Someone who's maybe really transformative, has really a fresh approach, but needs the backing and the support of the people up the chain. That sounds like an interesting challenge. And how did you overcome that?
You know, like I said, I was just fortunate enough to be able to explain it in a way that I was able to get backing. There was, you know, a lot of pushback at first. The site wasn't, you know, cheap to build. So, and there's no real, we have an e-commerce website, but you can't really explain the ROI on this website. It's more of a thought leadership, you know, bigger sales piece. And that was another challenge. You know, a lot of times finance are the people approving the numbers. And I'm going to finance asking for money to build a site. And like, well, what, you know, how much money is it going to bring us in? You know, your other site over here is doing a great job. And why isn't this site going to be bringing in money? Well, it is, but there's just no direct correlation to the money that it'll bring in.
Tell me a little bit about the technology challenges and maybe a little bit about the platform selection process.
I think with a lot of technology projects, one of the things that you're most worried about going into the planning and design is the execution and delivery. When you start a project that's kind of big and you're not really sure yet all of the moving pieces, you know, it's just, those are the, when we first started, those were the things that kind of were intimidating a little bit. And then when you start to kind of talk through them and the pieces start to get a little smaller, you can start to kind of figure out each one individually. And so I think that from a technology perspective, we knew, I think it made sense right away that for us to build it onto Magento, because we had direct access to a catalog that already existed. And we had access to a customer base so that you could, and you know, at the time we weren't super focused on making it commerce ready, because we knew that we were kind of offloading the commerce part of it to Pentair AES. That part of it, the multi-store part of Magento, I think is one of the selling features there about why would we choose Magento over something else. So that was a pretty much a no-brainer for us. And then as far as understanding like what were we going to use to do the walkthrough, we looked at a few different pieces of software that kind of did the same thing. But some of them were proprietary. Some of them were more difficult to implement. Some of them weren't great. When we kind of looked at like Street View and business and the business view for Google, like we kind of knew right away that that's the experience that we wanted. We just had to try and find a way to interact with it. So that's kind of what led us down that road to kind of select the Google business view and try and integrate the panorama with that. So
that's great. I'm sure whenever you're in that realm, especially as a creative or a digital agency, when you're in that realm, it's like exciting working with new technologies and sort of dreaming big, but it's also difficult. Like you said, you still have to execute, right? You kind of want to, you want to sort of keep it within the realm of doable. Keep it in reality.
Doable.
In this case.
Like those are the few things. Like, sure, it seems like, yes, you can always do anything. But as far as like making sure that you can stay within a budget while you're doing it too, you know, like those are important things to consider as well. And, you know, obviously that played into it a lot too, because the integrating with Google is free. And we already had a license for Magento. And then, you know, the community version is free. So, you know, those were two factors as well.
as we're kind of coming to a close, I always like to ask our guests, you know, what challenges do you see in the year ahead? What do you think is lying ahead in 2017 into 2018? And what do you think you're going to have to do to be successful?
I think, you know, Magento 2 is a big part of that. How's that live in the overall roadmap to Pentair world, not just Pentair aquatic ecosystems, but, you know, what other platforms within Pentair might want to go e-commerce? You know, I think we've done a great job with PentairAES.com. You know, I know there's other opportunity out there for other realms of Pentair. And how does that look for us, right? What does that roadmap look like? When do we do the Magento 2 upgrade? When should that happen? When can we get approved for the budgets for that too? I mean, that's probably the biggest hurdle. It's not really when, it's more of when are the funds going to come for that? That's the biggest challenge right now, seeing, you know, taking the success we've had with PentairAES.com and really leveraging across that board, because we are one company. Everyone, we're one Pentair. And so if we can leverage the successes we've had here, you know, working with great vendors such as Human Element, leverage that across the board and find small wins in other platforms, that's the challenges. That's where the big challenges are. Yeah, we can be successful in one company, but how can we collaborate with other companies within Pentair in order for us all to be successful? That's what's on my plate right now.
Wow.
I'm going to look at it from my perspective. If I'm a merchant and I'm looking at the landscape for 2017 and 2018, I think I have to be looking at virtual reality and augmented shopping experiences. Just rattling off a couple of statistics, 35% of consumers say they would shop more online if they were able to try on a product virtually. 63% said they would expect it to impact their shopping experience in the future. Hmm. Shopping is also experimented with virtual stores that you can move through, and with cheap access to virtual reality-like environment, thanks to things like Google Cardboard, we're going to be experiencing e-commerce.
Yeah.
What merchants need to look at are ways to make their experiences immersive, make them impactful, make them memorable, and make them novel. So you want to reach out to your consumers and whoever they are and just connect with them in a way that makes sense for your business. And I think that, you know, every day the technology for e-commerce gets better and better. One of the things that, you know, if we look at, you know, stereoscopic and monoscopic videos and taking this, like if you were to take the Pentair or the Pacewater tour to like the next generation, you're going to want the stereoscopic video where you can kind of just put it on and walk around. I mean, that API gets re-released all the time with new updates that allow you to do just that. And you can, you know, if you're using the Daydream, you can actually interact with it. You almost don't even need your mouse anymore. So I think like those are the things that, you know, we should be looking at. And I think it's, you know, especially for merchants like Pentair, if you can be kind of like pioneering in that way and get kind of incremental exposure to kind of how you're dealing with those technologies, it's going to set you up in the future to kind of be able to handle that change, as opposed to not doing anything now, waiting 2 years and then having to play catch up over 2 years of technology or 5 years of technology that you're kind of trying to play catch up on.
You sort of end there, and Sean sort of started with the conversation about, you know, potential having to re-platform with Magento 2 coming up. I think the platform selection is so important in trying to determine where your roadmap takes you in the next 4 to 5 years, and if you can, you know, eke that much life out of your platform. Especially when if you have an extremely commerce focused site and that's the only experience you're providing, it's hard to be different. It's hard to stand out from the pack. There's also a lot of things that you need to do just to compete today, never mind compete with Amazon, just to be relevant. But I think your platform can really hinder you. And so having a platform that's capable of providing experiences or has a community that's, you know, sort of helping push the envelope is really important. Of course, I'm the Magento fanboy. I'm not allowed to say that platform should be Magento. But I think it, when you're making a choice like that, we weren't talking about VR and AR. Never mind 18 months ago. We certainly weren't talking about it 5 years ago.
Sure. Yeah.
As being part of our commerce experiences,
that's Yeah, I totally understand. I just wanted to throw out there again that like they're estimating right now that the speed at which like virtual reality headsets are gaining market share by 2020, there could be as many as 200 million virtual reality headsets in the hands of residential consumers across America, which is crazy to think about. It's like a staggering number of devices.
It's incredible too. It's how many of these experiences we actually have every day. You know, Snapchat is a great example of some of what we might call, you know, light augmented reality. But facial recognition, you know, augmented reality and like worldview now, which was just announced today. You're seeing a lot of some of these small plays, even YouTube and Facebook have 360 panorama, 360, you know, 360 videos that place you sort of intuitively on your mobile device right in the space. And they've done such a great job of sort of softly introducing this to the consumer market that it's going to become a consumer demand pretty soon.
Yes.
And we have to, in commerce, building commerce experiences, we have to get ready for that. You know, having a 360 degree view of a space with your stuff in it, whether you're buying electronics or furniture, or if you want to see a dress sort of superimposed on yourself, those are all going to be consumer expectations because that's going to be... You know, just wait for Amazon to do it. That's what I say. When Amazon does it, you know, all bets are off. We have to do it.
The only thing I worry about is when they start putting, I don't even know what kind of a file it would be, to 3D print my whatever. So now I need to worry about that.
Yeah, that's coming soon. Actually, there's an interesting project, and this is a little sidebar. There's an interesting project called Niterate, a consumer accessible 3D printer for textiles, which is it's kind of pushing the envelope there. Of course, it'll be probably one of those Kickstarters that never actually ship. But the fact that these are things that people are attempting and thinking of, I think is an incredibly, it's kind of pushing the envelope, incredibly brave thing for us to be kind of venturing into. Wow. So closing thoughts, Sean, what's your take on this foray into content versus commerce and what do you think was your most successful piece of it?
You know, I think the site was the most successful piece of it. I think as a merchant that we owe it to ourselves to stay on top of these technology trends, don't get comfortable, always be creative and pushing to blast through whatever mold is being made right now. Don't always do what you've always done, disrupt the industry, all those taglines you can come up with. I think as, you know, definitely as a merchant, that's what we and myself need to focus on to grow the overall industry, take risks, kind of, you know, fail fast, learn from your failures. You know, there's nothing better I can do for myself than doing all I can to push myself, push Paul and Human Element to come up with creative ways in order to, you know, really help push this industry where it needs to be.
Got it. Well, that's a great place to end. Well, thank you so much, Sean Fahler. Of Pentair and Paul Briscoe over at The Human Element. Thank you so much for joining us. And we love having you guys join in this conversation. So if you are listening right now on iTunes, go ahead and give us a 5-star. Leave us a review for the Merchant to Merchant podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. We're available just about everywhere. Google Play, on Amazon, iTunes podcasts. We're also available on the Alexa too. I'm not going to trigger your device right now, but you can just say Alexa Play Merchant to Merchant podcast. But thank you. Thank you, too, for joining us. And until next time, keep building those awesome experiences.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.